Welcome to Angry Admins podcast for July 23rd, 2007, episode 36.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Angry Admins podcast. My name is Joe Bibby.
I'm Ryan Necessary.
And we welcome our special guest, Lee Claynaught, who is liming it up in the Caribbean right now. He's a Peace Corps volunteer. Say hello to the fans, Leo.
Hey, what's up?
It's somebody I've known for a long time, so we're excited to have him as a special guest. He's not a sysadmin, but he's going to report to us on, you know, what technology is like in the far-off places like the Caribbean, which isn't that far off, but hey, whatever.
On the news this week, some news from Google. Apparently in the upcoming auction for all the new wireless bands that are coming up, that they're opening up, I think in the 700 megahertz range, yeah. Google is planning to bid on some of that in an effort to help create sort of a free ubiquitous Wi-Fi cloud out there for anyone to access. So those are up for grabs, and a lot of people have big plans for that. And Google said that they're willing to throw $4.6 billion at it.
Wow.
So pretty good number there. I don't know if that's big for them. I have no concept of how much they have in the bank. But anyway, so that's they're willing to commit that for the auction. And even if they don't get it, they might be willing to throw some money towards someone else who is going to win. And mainly I think they're just concerned that they want to help contribute to having some sort of free Wi-Fi out there.
Well, I think the other play here is, I mean, they want to spin it as they're like this benevolent company trying to open up the Wi-Fi access. But if you think about it, if they gain access to this big range, I mean, this is a, you can push a lot of data over this brand. Imagine if they had control over this. Now they can kind of push out Verizon and AT&T. You know, this whole net neutrality thing where Verizon's trying to charge Google more money, they can be like, all right, we'll just make our own network, and it's free.
Right.
So,
plus, then everyone will have Google Video and YouTube on their cell phones.
Yeah,
24/7.
I mean, they could make a cell phone network, a free Wi-Fi network, and I mean, several other things just from this band. It's
that would be nice.
Yeah, I hope they. I hope
more
they
customers.
Get it. Oh yeah, more customers to push more ads, and and they'll be able to sell off some of this space. I think part of the FCC requirement. I know about a lot about this because I was actually listening to another podcast, so I'm stealing this ideas from somebody else. But they have to let other people use this network even if they purchase it, but they lease it to these other people. So even if they own it and never use it, the money they'll make from leasing it to these other companies is going to be big money.
And I'm not sure how much of it's going to be, or if any of it's really going to be, quote-unquote, free.
Right.
But at least it will be freed up for someone to use.
Yeah. Well, and I think Google has said they want to, if they win it, they want to make open access.
But yeah.
Anyway, good for Google. Hopefully they don't turn evil once they do that. Speaking of evil, NBC has submitted an FCC filing claiming peer-to-peer costs corn farmers money.
What?
That's right. Those down-home Indiana corn farmers, they're all worried about Jimmy in his basement peer-to-peering that latest album. I don't understand. I mean, so here's their logic. This is amazing. I'm going to read this straight from the story. This is from Ars Technica that we got this. In the absence of movie piracy, video retailers would sell and rent more titles, says the filing. Movie theaters would sell more tickets and more popcorn. Corn growers would earn greater profits and buy more farm equipment. Yay! I mean, come on!
Weak! That's so weak.
That's like a six-year-old's logic. Just because they're connected in some way means that they're directly affected by this. They're not factoring in the fact that corn growers are making most of their money from ethanol now, not movie popcorn.
What about all the poor kids who work at the movie theater vacuuming up your chocolate-covered raisins?
That's right.
They're going to get put out of work by peer-to-peer.
See?
Come on. Yeah, all those pimple-faced kids, man. They need the money.
I know. Of course, they're the ones peer-to-peering, so
yeah,
they're affecting themselves. Oh, no, they're going to die.
Wait, it's probably those kids at the movie theater that are doing the original top-level piracy.
That's right. Not these big companies in Europe. This is just so weak that I can't believe NBC would even put their name behind this. They should be ashamed that they would even put this logic out there
Wow.
for everyone to see. Yeah, I don't know.
That's pretty crappy.
It's pretty wild. So next story we've got is Lee's bringing something to the table.
Well, we're going to talk about America's Internet Disconnect. It's a story that's been put out by the Washington Post, and it's a theme that we see a lot. Basically, it's complaints about the U.S. is falling behind with Internet access. Right now, they're saying Asian and European customers get home connections of 25 to 100 megabits per second, fast enough for high-stream video. And in America, nearly one-tenth people don't even have a broadband provider. So that's pretty scary.
Yeah.
And if you look back in the history of the FCC, they still define broadband as 200 kilobytes per second. That's scary. And lastly, in the article, they stated that the United States had made a campaign promise of universal broadband access by 2007, but no strategy is there for getting there.
What a shock!
So, with less than 2 months to go, we aren't even within shouting distance of that. Now, here I am in the Caribbean,
right?
And I'm enjoying 1.3 megabyte download and 512 KB upload.
Nice.
And I'm living in a fishing village on the west side of an island. Now, does anybody see a problem with here, you know? I'm trying to figure it out.
That's something.
That's amazing. And, I mean, so here we are talking over Skype to you. And if I tried to call my in-laws over Skype, who have dial-up 288K, I mean, it would be impossible. So, you know, you living in a fishing village, Lee, have better internet access than my in-laws who live in the United States.
It's true. My in-laws, they live up in northern Indiana, and the only way they can get internet is through their digital satellite provider, and it's going to like $400 a month.
Yeah.
And it's just unbelievable.
It is. It's crazy. And the U.S., I mean, part of it's because we're so big and everything is just, you know, held back by red tape left and right that it just takes anything for this lumbering beast to get going. And, you know, we have to be careful because we are going to get left behind if we don't keep up with the internet. I mean, we invented the internet. We created its foundation. And yet we have Korea and Japan and probably soon China taking over the internet with faster speeds. And, you know, they're doing things that we can't even try to do because our connections just aren't fast enough.
Well, on the list, weren't we behind like Estonia or something?
I think so.
So
yeah.
Where the hell is Estonia? I've never even heard of Estonia. And they have better internet.
No, it's
internet.
Bad.
Man, whatever. Okay, next.
Poland. Poland ranks higher than us, I think.
Nice. That's... Well, you know, they're really good at everything.
Better sauerkraut and internet. Huh?
I'm not touching the whole Poland thing. Okay, moving on. There was a story this week from, I don't know where it was from.
Engadget.
Thank you, Joe.
Hey, no problem.
So apparently everybody's desperate to find something wrong with the iPhone, and they've said, well, we found a security hole, and it has to do with the Safari web browser, which is used on Apple and consequently runs on the iPhone. Apparently certain sites that are set up in a malicious manner can be used. If the browser goes to that site, then... the people running the site can then take over that target host and have pretty much administrative control there. This was done by kind of a research security group that does this kind of thing, penetration testing. They were able to pretty much have their way with any Safari browser-enabled machine, but they also said that they had notified Apple and they told them about a fix, you know, possible way to fix it. And so I don't think it's been seen in the wild. You know, it's one of those, hey, we found this problem, here's the fix, blah, 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 let's get it closed up. But it hasn't been seen out there as far as someone got taken advantage of yet. So
I think it's probably not going to be too far along before we start to see some zero-day exploits on the iPhone. It's such a big product. I mean, it's put itself in the place that Microsoft is in, where so many people look at it and so many people want to get into it.
Well, here's the thing, too. I think the PCs used to be the home of viruses, worms, hackers, all that kind of stuff, because there were so many of them out there. It was a target-rich environment.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple never had to worry about that because they were only just a small part of the market share, like 5% or whatever. But now that's growing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the people with Macs, there is a potential there for serious exploitation because the operating system they're running, I would say, is much more powerful, being it being a Linux-type OS than Windows, because there's I mean, you could set up all kinds of accounts. You can do all kinds of web servers. Mm-hmm. I mean, you really can, if you take over the back end of an Apple box, you really have a lot more tools there to have fun with than a Windows box.
Yeah.
Because it's a truly multi-user OS, you know, at least in its roots.
Yeah. A lot of it is just if you're small enough, you don't have to worry about it. I mean, a lot of people say that Linux is actually in the same camp where, if you looked at Linux a little closer, you know, there actually are a lot of exploits that could be made. But, mm-hmm. you know, then on the other hand, it is open source, so everybody's looking at it all the time.
Right.
Whereas Microsoft is closed down, and they're still finding lots of exploits. So, yeah. I don't know. You could go either way with it. But this is something to watch out for because I do not want a virus on my phone.
Right. All right.
You know, that's where I draw the line.
Yeah, because it's
just going to... Apple has got the iTV coming out, plus you got your phone, plus you've got your laptop. I mean, if they were able to get a serious virus out, it could shut you down.
Yeah. Yeah, because all those are running OS 10.
Well, the thing is, you know, if you feel like they're all like pretty integrated and suddenly one has a problem, now suddenly you don't trust any of your gadgets.
Right.
You know, and you're wondering, right. Oh, well, how do I patch this and how do I patch that? And mm-hmm.
Now, one thing, though, I think the iPhone, because it's not a standard processor, I think they would be pretty safe. I think it'd be harder to create a virus that would spread from the iPhone like to your PC or to your Mac, I mean. But from the Apple TV to the Mac or the other way around, it could easily happen, I think.
It just creates doubt.
Yeah, yeah. No more commercials making fun of the PC.
Yeah.
Well, didn't I read the biggest fear AT&T had was it would take down their network if a virus got on the iPhone?
Yeah, yeah, that was one of the
How realistic is that? How realistic is that?
Well, I think because of the way the iPhone is designed, the way that it's pulling the visual voicemail is actually data being pulled from the AT&T servers. If they could tap into that and get access to the voicemail servers, they could probably do some damage. The other thing they could maybe do is like just do like a denial of service attack through the iPhone to the AT&T servers. But honestly, you could do that from a Windows mobile phone just as easily.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, my Windows mobile phone that I just got is, it could easily install a virus on it if I go to the wrong website.
So the really lethal thing would be if you got a bug on your phone and then in the middle of the night, the thing dials around the world and it racks up some giant phone charge against your bill.
Yeah.
That would be horrible.
Oh, man.
That would be terrible.
Especially if you're calling someplace like...
Man, that would piss me off.
...the Caribbean where Leo is.
Right, yeah. Speaking of your iPhone...
Godforsaken place.
...dialing something, I was listening to another podcast, and this guy was talking about how he docked his iPhone into one of those iPod alarm clocks.
Yeah?
And he said that the noise from the GSM chip in it, so this is the cellular chip contacting the tower.
Right.
You know, you can usually hear that in your speakers making that tick, 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 tick sound.
Right.
Apparently that interacted with his alarm clock, turned the alarm on, and then started cycling radio channels. He was freaking out because it was like some bad horror movie.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
In an awesome way, I guess.
So watch out because your iPhone is haunted.
Yes. It's taken over your whole house.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on now that we've gone down several rat holes. Next story is Windows version 7, which is what Microsoft is currently calling the next version of Windows. Supposed to be coming in 2010. Microsoft is really pushing to get software subscription on this new version. You know, this really makes sense for them because they need to find a new way to bring in some money. Their stock has been pretty stagnant over the last few years. And yeah, they're still making lots of money, but they really want to find a way to grow. And software subscription, giving them this regular income, is a pretty smart way to do it, but I have to say it pisses me off to no end.
So what's the model? I mean, I didn't read this. So is it like you get the OS, instead of throwing a big chunk of change down up front, then you're just paying like $10 a
right.
month or something?
Right, and then you subscribe, so then there's no more paying to upgrade. The next version just kind of comes. They have a deal like that for business now called Software Assurance, but nobody's using it because... It took them like 6 years to upgrade to Vista. So people are paying for the software assurance for XP. And they paid for it for 6 years without getting an upgrade. So it was like a total waste of money.
That sucks.
So that's kind of what they're hoping for. But no, I don't like monthly charges. And I guess I'm just being the old cranky guy saying, kids, get off my lawn. But I don't want to pay a subscription fee for my OS.
Well, you know they're just going to make the patches. They're going to roll the patches into that. So unless you want to be infected, you're going to have to pay your monthly.
I mean, I literally would probably stop using Windows at home if that came to that.
Man, what a horrible idea.
Yeah.
I mean, they've already got this giant monopoly. Why are they trying to lock us down on this?
Yeah. And I see this, you know, they talk about doing this in third world countries and things, and I just see this really hurting. I mean, imagine, Lee, if to have a computer over there, these people have to pay a monthly fee. Do you think any of them would actually use it?
I mean, the biggest problem is getting access to the internet. So, you know, with that monthly fee, it'd have to renew itself and download updates, and right. It would expire, and it wouldn't work.
Right. Mm. Yeah, I just don't see. I mean, I see a lot of backlash on this, and I think that's why they're bringing this to the table now. You know, they're not expecting it to come out for 3 more years. So they're going to start
easing it
now, and yep.
Yeah, they're going to dance with their hand.
And they'll probably say, okay, you're going to have to do all this, this, and this, and then they'll cut it back like half.
Right.
Like, look how nice we are.
Yeah. Yeah, they're going to dance with us with their hand on our butt for 3 years before they make a move. By then, we're all good with it.
We've brought in our special guest, Lee Claynaught, with Peace Corps. We wanted to talk a little bit about how tech is relevant in other countries and in countries that aren't maybe as well off as the United States, and just see, you know, what they can be used for there, and if it even is needed, and if they maybe even are even a little better off than we are here in the States. So, Lee, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're doing there, and go ahead and do that.
Hey, everybody. I'm serving down here in the island of St. Lucia in the Eastern Caribbean, the West Indies, with the United States Peace Corps. It's a 2-year program. You can be anywhere in the world, but I was able to come here. And I'm serving for 2 years focusing on economic development. I basically live in a fishing village on the west side of the island. And this village in particular suffers about a 30% unemployment rate. And the biggest economic activity is taking a boat out to the sea and pulling in some fish. So that's where I'm working. And then, but the amazing thing is right now I get 1.3 meg internet, and faster internet than I could even get back in the States. And so it's interesting to see the difference there. You know, basically a third world country, but faster internet than you would have in the U.S.
Yeah, that is amazing. I mean, you know, here we are talking over Skype, and it's crystal clear.
Yeah.
And you're in this little tiny island in the middle of the Caribbean. And, you know, we talked about this a little bit already, so it's just crazy to me that that's even possible. What other tech do you see being used there? Is it that pervasive, or is it still kind of in a limited rollout in there?
Well, the biggest focus for tech is, I mean, first of all, the young people love it because, well, let's be honest, they can you know, get music,
right.
Get movies, stay connected to the world in that way, to pop culture. You know, up in the northern part of the city, they're selling all the latest movies that are in the theaters. They're selling DVDs of them, making money. Mm-hmm. And one thing St. Lucians are is they're entrepreneurs. I mean, they know how to make money any way possible. As far as for businesses, you know, some of the banks here are just starting to offer online access, but most of the time to pay your bills, you know, when I get my phone bill, I have to take a 45-minute bus ride.
Wow.
Up a windy west side of the island, you know, ride where these guys give NASCAR a competition, and you have to wait in line for 45 minutes and pay your bill. And the whole concept of paying online is not quite here yet.
Okay.
But then again, you know, internet prices just dropped. Right now, you can get internet for 80 EC, which is about 30 US, which is they get 512 download and I think 256 upload, and $30 for internet DSL. That's really amazing.
So what would that be in relation to like what an average person makes in, you know, say a day or a week? There is that pretty high for them to pay something like that?
No, that's great. It just dropped. It was 150
wow.
EC, which is about 60 US.
Okay,
and they just halved it. So and this is just recently. And so, you know, it's incredible, really, that fast a speed for that price. And one of the things you'll notice if you look at any of the articles that are out about how the U.S. is falling behind on internet is just the price for DSL access is so much more expensive in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's pretty crazy that it would be that different. So you were talking before about young people using technology. What kind of age groups are we talking about here? Is there like a gap where suddenly you don't really see anybody using tech at a certain age?
Well, it's still like the U.S. where people that are, I mean, I hate to generalize, but it seems like 50 plus are scared of computers
and don't
necessarily see how they help them with their everyday work. But young kids, you know, they want to, every time I have little kids come over to my house, they want to touch my computer. They want to see it because, you know, they know that email's there, YouTube's there, that they can watch music videos. And so they're not afraid of it, and they want it. They want it, and they like it. They see their, you know, older brothers. As soon as one of the biggest purchases is just to get a laptop here for the older guys, you know, 17 on up, it's a real status symbol to get a laptop. And because it opens the gateway for them to be able to basically burn their own music, you know, get movies, chat with their friends, send email. So it's very popular. It's part of society here. It's just the internet access is still taking a while. But with that price drop of 50%, I think a lot more people in this small fishing village are going to start having internet.
So you talk about laptops. Do you see more laptops than anything else? I mean, are that many people even using desktops? It seems like laptops would be a better fit.
Yeah. Desktops are basically used maybe in the schools and the businesses, but everyone has a laptop.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
That's the way to go down here. It's portable, easy to use. And the other thing is the power supply down here is pretty irregular. We have lots of power surges and power spikes. And a desktop computer it seems that the power supply gets taken out a lot more.
Yeah, it would.
Just in the community group that I'm working with, they've had their computer, the power supply has gotten fried twice since they put it in the office. It's only been there a year.
That's not good.
How are they accessing the internet? Is it a phone dial-in type thing, or is it?
Yeah, it's a phone. It's a phone. You have a line rental, and then you get it through your modem. So
gotcha.
Yeah.
So let's bring it to something a little specific that's maybe relevant to some people over here. We've heard a lot in the news in the States about the OLPC, one laptop per child, and it's been kind of controversial because some people think it's kind of a waste of time. I mean, why would somebody who's barely making it for their next meal need a laptop? And, you know, like you were saying, internet access is limited. Is this something that you see over there yet? And if so, is it getting used correctly, do you feel like, or maybe something that it's still maybe a year or two away from being useful? I mean, we've seen a news story just in the last week how a lot of, I think it was in China, they were complaining that all the kids are using it to surf porn in the classroom. So what do you see this being useful, and is it relevant in the culture there?
Well, I can see it fitting in here. You know, I'm here, I'm working in these schools, and if you hear that, it's in the background. We're having a rain come through from the rainforest, so and the crickets are chirping, so anyway, ignore that. But anyway, with the laptops, I see it working because already in the schools, they have desktop computers that the principals use, and they have internet access. So all they have to do is put a wireless router in, and these laptops could be used. I think what it comes down to is eliminating what we call the digital divide.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the kids whose families work in the banks have the prestigious jobs on this island. You know, they've got DSL in their house. They've got internet access. They're learning to write, to type, to email. And these kids are going to be fine. But the 80% of the rest of the population of young kids here, they're not going to have any time with a laptop or a computer. And they're going to be at a huge disadvantage. And especially when they're trying to transition into college here. If they don't have any sort of background, any access to computers, it's going to be too wide of a gap, and they're not going to be able to make that transition. And I can see these kids using these laptops in the schools as a medium for these teachers to help them. I can definitely see it working because, I mean, when you have kids going outside and practicing their letters in the dirt with a stick, you know, versus having that little green machine inside of a classroom where the teacher can show them the letter on the screen, and then they can practice it on the screen, you know, with their mouse. I mean, it really could work. And the other thing, the key point is, I think the key is the international funders are going to like it, because you could dump $20 million into HIV prevention here, which, you know, it should happen and is happening. But how do you measure those results at the end? Can you really measure that? But when you give, you know, this is a population of 240,000 people. When you bring in 100,000 of those PCs and let the kids use them, you're going to make a huge impact, because you're separating that digital divide. You're getting them used to using a computer, using the keyboard, the mouse. And I think it's easy to measure the results.
Mm. Yeah. So one thing I was wondering is, like, all these laptops, what do people do when they have problems? I mean, is there, like, a market there of people who fix tech or, like, replace it? Or, like, who sets up the DSL? You know, I'm assuming you don't have Best Buy there, so there's no Geek Squad in St. Lucia.
No, there's no Geek Squad. It's, you know, it's through the phone company. They do it. They kind of have a monopoly down here. But there's PC stores up into the big city. I mean, in any developing country, you know, here the capital's Castries, but in any of the other small islands, the capital is where you're going to go to get your computer stuff, to get any of those supplies. And a lot of it comes in from when they go to visit the U.S. or go to England. They send a lot of computers back here, and a lot of technology comes back into the country. And there are tech people, because there's businesses here that have to have access, and there's rich expats that come here and buy their dream house, you know, on the island. And so there is a demand for that, and that trickles down to everyone.
Mm. So let's kind of, you know, wrap it up a little bit here. The Peace Corps, would you say that there's maybe a need for tech smart people in the Peace Corps going out to these islands?
There's definitely a need in Peace Corps. They are behind a bit on the technology. The Peace Corps website's not too bad, but as far as there's plenty of use. There's a couple people that are teaching IT classes here on the island. You can, if you don't want to work with youth, you can work with adults who are eager to learn. There's also, you know, labs where you have a bunch of students in there, and you basically teach them the, you know, how to use a computer, how to do word processing, all those basic things. I've been personally working with the town secretary, the town clerk, and teaching her how to write a proposal, how to use Microsoft Word, so she can submit proposals for development in this village. And so that's really been interesting. So yeah, I feel like I'm being used here. It's not going to be the case necessarily if you go to Africa, some of those areas. I mean, the Peace Corps, where you're posted, really makes a difference. But you can specify where you want to go to a point.
Have you found? I know you brought a laptop with you, and you keep a blog updated pretty regularly. Have you found that pretty useful? I know you try to get funding through that. Have you found that?
Well, yeah,
helpful?
It's amazing. It's made a huge difference. One, I'm able to stay connected with my family and friends, let them know, you know, what I'm doing at all times, and I'm able to put some of the little projects I want to do. One of the unfortunate things with Peace Corps is they don't give you any sort of funding to do a project. They basically drop you off in the country, give you some training, and say, you know, here you go. Find the money however you can, and good luck. But the government doesn't provide any, so you have to kind of ask friends back in the States to maybe sponsor a small project, and you can approach churches or whoever you want. So it's definitely helpful for that, and just to stay connected with my friends and family. You know, I don't want to just disappear for 2 years off the map and suddenly come back and everybody's like, wow, what happened to you? I mean, they can see what's going on, see what my adventure is down here.
So is that pretty common for people to have blogs and that kind of thing, or is that fairly new? Do you see it a lot in your team?
It's happening more and more. Peace Corps doesn't like it because sometimes people put their, you know, party pictures on there,
right,
or complain about Peace Corps.
You would never do that, would you, Lou?
for the most part, it's good. Even in Africa, you know, people are keeping their blogs. They may only be able to update their blog once a month because they only go to the main to the capital, you know, to get supplies once a month. But it does provide an opportunity for them to keep in touch with their family. So, you know, I really recommend it. If anybody wants to see what it's like to work down here, they're welcome to go see my blog. I've got videos and things posted and give you a taste of what it's like to be a Peace Corps volunteer.
And what's that website?
It's bigcountryleo.blogspot.com.
All right. We'll have a link in the show notes to that, but that's where you can find more information about Lee, and you still have the PayPal donation up there, right?
Oh, yeah.
So feel free.
Show me the money.
if you're interested in some of the things he's doing and want to support Lee and the Peace Corps, I know he would appreciate any donations any of our listeners have to give. So go ahead and go there. We'll have the link in the show notes and donate whatever you need. Well, that's going to wrap up this episode of Angry Admins. I want to thank Lee once again for taking some time out of his busy schedule in St. Lucia in the Caribbean. Appreciate him giving us some insight into the culture there and how tech is influential and if it's even relevant. Lee, do you have anything you want to plug before we go?
Yeah, if anybody's interested in joining the Peace Corps, it's a 2-year commitment, and you can pretty much go anywhere in the world. To check it out, go to peacecorps.gov, and there's a map, and you can see all the different locations. If you're an angry admin out there and you just can't take it anymore and you want a change of latitude, then check out Peace Corps. You just need a bachelor's degree and basically a heart to serve. And it's a great experience. It'll give you a good work experience, and it will change your life.
All right. And what was that website once again where they can send you some money?
Oh, okay. Yep. bigcountryleo.blogspot.com. If you want to support any of the projects that I'm working on, small donation is fine. That's what it's all about, though, is helping these people in the Caribbean, and I'd appreciate it.
And it's all done through PayPal, so it's all kosher. He'll never see your credit card number. All right. Well, thanks again, Lee. And if you want to see the show notes and find Lee's website or read anything about what we've talked about today, you can hit up our website at angryadmins.com. And if you want to discuss any of these topics, we do have a forum, angryadmins.com/forum. We appreciate any feedback we can get from that. Or if you just want to send us an email, you can hit us at feedback@angryadmins.com. So until next time, I'm Joe Bibby.
I'm Ryan Necessary.
I'm Lee Claynott. Admins, stay vexed.